Chapter 52. As he had escaped exposure on this occasion, but the incident had been an awkward one, and should have suggested to Baptista that sooner or later the secret must leak out. As it was, she suspected that at any rate as he had not heard the last of the glazier. In a day or two, when her husband had gone to the old town on the other side of the island, there came a gentle tap at the door, and the worthy witness of her first marriage made his appearance a second time. It took me hours to get to the bottom of the mystery hours. ... he said with a gaze of deep confederacy which offended her pride very deeply. But thanks to a good intellect I've done it. Now, ma'am, I'm not a man to tell tales, even when a tale would be so good as this. But I'm going back to the mainland again, and a little assistance would be as rain on thirsty ground. ... I helped you 2 days ago, began Baptista. Yes, but what was that, my good lady? Not enough to pay my passage to Pen Zephyr. I came over on your account, for I thought there was a mystery somewhere. Now I must go back on my own. Mind, this won't be very awkward for you, if your old man were to know. He's a queer temper, though he may be fond. ... She knew as well as her visitor how awkward it would be, and the hush money she paid was heavy that day. As he had, however, the satisfaction of watching the man to the steamer and seeing him diminish out of sight. But Baptista perceived that the system into which as he had been led of purchasing silence thus was one fatal to her peace of mind, particularly if it had to be continued. Hearing no more from the glazier, she hoped the difficulty was past. But another week only had gone by, when, as she was pacing the Giant's Walk, the name given to the promenade, she met the same personage in the company of a fat woman carrying a bundle. This is the lady, my dear, he said to his companion. This, ma'am, is my wife. We've come to settle in the town for a time, if so be we can find room. ... that you won't do, said she. Nobody can live here who is not privileged. ... I am privileged, said the glazier, by my trade. Baptista went on, but in the afternoon she received a visit from the man's wife. This honest woman began to depict, in forcible colors, the necessity for keeping up the concealment. I will intercede with my husband, ma'am, she said. He's a true man if rightly managed, and I'll beg him to consider your position. 'Tis a very nice house you've got here, she added, glancing round, and well worth a little sacrifice to keep it. The unlucky Baptista staved off the danger on this third occasion as he had done on the previous two. But she formed a resolve that, if the attack were once more to be repeated, she would face a revelation worse, though that must now be than before as he had attempted to purchase silence by bribes. Her tormentors, never believing her capable of acting upon such an intention, came again, but she shut the door in their faces. They retreated, muttering something, but she went to the back of the house, where David Hedigan was. She looked at him, unconscious of all. The case was serious, she knew that well, and all the more serious in that she liked him better now than as he had done at first. Yet, as she herself began to see, the secret was one that was sure to disclose itself. Her name and Charles's stood indelibly written in the registers, and though a month only had passed as yet, it was a wonder that his clandestine union with her had not already been discovered by his friends. Thus spurring herself to the inevitable, she spoke to Hedigan. David, come indoors. I have something to tell you. He hardly regarded her at first. As he had discerned that during the last week or two he had seemed preoccupied, as if some private business harassed him. She repeated her request. He replied with a sigh, yes, certainly, me dear. ... When they had reached the sitting room and shut the door, she repeated, Faintly, David, I have something to tell you, a sort of tragedy I have concealed. You will hate me for having so far deceived you, but perhaps my telling you voluntarily will make you think a little better of me than you would do otherwise. Apostrophe, apostrophe, tragedy? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said, awakening to interest. Much you can know about tragedies, me dear, that have been in the world so short a time. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she saw that he suspected nothing, and it made her task the harder. But on she went steadily. It is about something that happened before we were married, apostrophe, she said. Indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not a very long time before a short time. And it is about a lover, apostrophe, she faltered. I don't much mind that, apostrophe, he said mildly. In truth, I was in hopes 'twas more. Apostrophe, apostrophe, in hopes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, yes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this screwed her up to the necessary effort. I met my old sweetheart. He scorned me, chid me, dared me, and I went and married him. We were coming straight here to tell you all what we had done, but he was drowned, and I thought I would say nothing about him. And I married you, David, for the sake of peace and quietness. I've tried to keep it from you, but have found I cannot. There, that's the substance of it, and you can never, never forgive me, I am sure. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she spoke desperately. But the old man, instead of turning black or blue, or slaying her in his indignation, jumped up from his chair, and began to caper around the room in quite an ecstatic emotion. Oh, happy thing! How well it falls out! Apostrophe, he exclaimed, snapping his fingers over his head. Ha ha, the knot is cut, I see a way out of my trouble, ha ha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, she looked at him without uttering a sound, till, as he still continued smiling joyfully, she said, oh, what do you mean? Is it done to torment me? Apostrophe, no, no. Oh, me dear, your story helps me out of the most heartaching quandary a poor man ever found himself in. You see, it is this I've got a tragedy to, and unless you had had one to tell, I could never have seen my way to tell mine. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what is yours, what is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she asked, with altogether a new view of things. Well, it is a bouncer, mine is a bouncer. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said he, looking on the ground and wiping his eyes. Not worse than mine? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, that depends upon how you look at it. Yours had to do with the past alone, and I don't mind it. You see, we've been married a month, and it don't jar upon me as it would if we'd only been married a day or two. Now mine refers to past, present, and future, so that, apostrophe, past, present, and future, apostrophe, apostrophe, she murmured. It never occurred to me that you had a tragedy to, apostrophe, apostrophe, but I have. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said, shaking his head. In fact, four. Apostrophe, then tell him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the young woman. I will. But be considerate, I beg ye, me dear. Well, I wasn't a bachelor when I married ye, any more than you were a spinster. Just as you was a widow woman, I was a widow man. Ah. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said she, with some surprise. But is that all? Then we are nicely balanced, apostrophe, she added, relieved. No, it is not all. There's the point. I am not only a widower. Apostrophe, oh, David. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am a widower with four tragedies, that is to say, four strapping girls the eldest taller than you. Don't he look so struck dumb-like? It fell out in this way. I knew the poor woman, their mother, in Pen Zephyr for some years. And to cut a long story short, I privately married her at last, just before she died. I kept the matter secret, but it is getting known among the people here by degrees. I've long felt for the children, that it is my duty to have them here, and do something for them. I have not had courage to break it to ye, but I've seen lately that it would soon come to your ears, and that have worried me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, are they educated? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the ex-schoolmistress. No. I am sorry to say they have been much neglected. In truth, they can hardly read. And so I thought that, by marrying a young schoolmistress, I should get someone in the house who could teach them, and bring them into genteel condition, all for nothing. You see, they are grown up too tall to be sent to school. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, mercy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she almost moaned. Four great girls to teach the rudiments to, and have always in the house with me spelling over their books. And I hate teaching, it kills me. I am bitterly punished, I am. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you'll get used to 'em, me dear, and the balance of secrets mine against yours will comfort your heart with a sense of justice. I could send for 'em this week very well, and I will. In faith, I could send this very day. Baptista, you have relieved me of all my difficulty. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thus the interview ended, so far as this matter was concerned. Baptista was too stupefied to say more, and when she went away to her room she wept from very mortification at Mr. Hedigan's duplicity. Education, the one thing she abhorred. The shame of it to delude a young wife so. The next meal came round. As they sat, Baptista would not suffer her eyes to turn towards him. He did not attempt to intrude upon her reserve, but every now and then looked under the table and chuckled with satisfaction at the aspect of affairs. How very well matched we be! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said, comfortably. Next day, when the steamer came in, Baptista saw her husband rush down to meet it, and soon after there appeared at her door four tall, hipless, shoulderless girls, dwindling in height and size from the eldest to the youngest, like a row of panpipes, at the head of them standing Hedigan. He smiled pleasantly through the gray fringe of his whiskers and beard, and turning to the girl said, "Now come forward, and shake hands properly with your stepmother." Apostrophe, apostrophe, thus she made their acquaintance, and he went out, leaving them together. On examination the poor girls turned out to be not only plain-looking, which she could have forgiven, but to have such a lamentably meager intellectual equipment, as to be hopelessly inadequate as companions. Even the eldest, almost her own age, could only read with difficulty words of two syllables, and taste in dress was beyond their comprehension. In the long vista of future years she saw nothing but dreary drudgery at her detested old trade without prospect of reward. She went about quite despairing during the next few days, an unpromising, unfortunate mood for a woman who had not been married 6 weeks. From her parents she concealed everything. They had been amongst the few acquaintances of Hedigan who knew nothing of his secret, and were indignant enough when they saw such a ready-made household foisted upon their only child. But she would not support them in their remonstrances. "No, you don't yet know all," apostrophe she said. Thus Baptista had sense enough to see the retributive fairness of this issue. For some time, whenever conversation arose between her and Hedigan, which was not often, she always said, "I am miserable, and you know it. Yet I don't wish things to be otherwise." Apostrophe, but one day when he asked, "How do you like 'em now?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, her answer was unexpected. "Much better than I did," apostrophe she said, quietly. "I may like them very much someday." Apostrophe, apostrophe, this was the beginning of a serener season for the chastened spirit of Baptista Hedigan. As he had, in truth, discovered, underneath the crust of uncouthness and meager articulation which was due to their troglodytic existence, that her unwelcome daughters had natures that were unselfish almost to sublimity. The harsh discipline accorded to their young lives before their mother's wrong had been righted, had operated less to crush them than to lift them above all personal ambition. They considered the world and its contents in a purely objective way, and their own lot seemed only to affect them as that of certain human beings among the rest, whose troubles they knew rather than suffered. This was such an entirely new way of regarding life to a woman of Baptista's nature, that her attention, from being first arrested by it, became deeply interested. By imperceptible pulses her heart expanded in sympathy with theirs. The sentences of her tragi-comedy, her life, confused till now, became clearer daily. That in humanity, as exemplified by these girls, there was nothing to dislike, but infinitely much to pity, she learned with the lapse of each week in their company. She grew to like the girls of unpromising exterior, and from liking she got to love them, till they formed an unexpected point of junction between her own and her husband's interests, generating a sterling friendship at least, between a pair in whose existence there had threatened to be neither friendship nor love. October, 1885. End of the Project Gutenberg Text A Changed Man, and Other Tales. CHGMN by Gutenberg Edition.